Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill. I'm delighted again to be able to speak to CEO Adam Holland and Group Finance Director Will Wilkins of MPAC, a leading high-speed packaging and automation solutions firm serving the healthcare, food and beverage, and clean energy sectors. So welcome, gents.
Good morning. Morning. Welcome, Paul. Nice to see you again.
Yeah, well, big congrats on this morning's strong first half results and positive outlook, with sales rising 14% and adjusted EPS more than doubling at 15.2p. But before we sort of run through those details, Adam, I don't suppose you could just quickly remind the audience exactly what MPAC does, its core, sort of core and key USPs, and likewise the sort of the longer term sort of like market opportunity for the group.
Yeah. Now, when we talk about MPAC, we often say that we build the machines that package and automate the products that millions of people around the world depend on. Those are products, as you say, in food and beverage, in healthcare, and in clean energy. And those markets break down for us about 40% of our business, 30-40% is in food and beverage, about 30-40% is in healthcare, and an increasing percentage this year, up to between 10-15% is in clean energy. And we're very proud to talk about our customers. You know, we've got some incredible customers, blue chip customers who we work with for many, many, many years. They're demanding, and keeping pace with them is what we do. USPs. What are the USPs? Well, we're a people business. Fundamentally, we're a people business. And amongst the financial results you've talked about is a number that I think I'm very pleased with, is that the headcount in technical team, the technical headcount has increased to 350 in the first half of this year. And that's allowed us to do 21% more technical hours in the first half compared with the first half of the prior year. You know, that doesn't show through in an analyst report. It doesn't get talked about. But fundamentally, our business is our people, and the ability of our teams to continue to recruit and attract great people, retain and develop them. That is what makes the difference in our group.
And I guess that's a leading indicator as well, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It is.
What is the sort of longer term opportunity then? I mean, as in terms of, because I guess you've still got a fairly small part of a sort of like a huge market here. That how are you seeing that market opportunity?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the market is huge. Every year, more than $40 billion worth of packaging machinery and automation equipment is bought somewhere on the planet by customers like ours. And it is a very robust market. You know, it's driven by some fundamental economics of population growth, rising life expectancy, you know, the trend of urbanization and so on. I think there are three trends that are really important right now. The first is labor shortage. You know, it's an irony in our business that when we read about labor shortages in the newspapers, you know, that is a good news story for automation, because it drives a need for more automation in the factories that produce the products we all depend on. And that's our business. The irony is, of course, we've still got to recruit people to create that automation. So labor shortages. I think the second trend, very, very relevant right now, is reshoring. You know, coming out of the COVID crisis and the shipping issues that occurred in the sort of early 2020s through to 2022, we've seen an increasing trend to reshore and a rising build of factories in the US, for example. And then the third trend is is the investment takes financing, and we know that interest rates are continuing to stay high at the moment. That does affect our customers, of course it does. The smaller businesses that we work with tend to run their capital programs, their automation programs, by raising finance to do them. And those decisions are hard for small businesses to make at the moment. So, you know, we see that impact on decision making. But our larger blue chip customers invest for the long term and have very, very robust balance sheets to build on. So, you know, we do see those three trends, and you see it in our numbers coming through.
And I'm guessing also the sort of shift towards automation and robotics is not only a people shortage, it's more the cost dynamics, because as around the world, if their sort of like salaries go up, but equally the cost of delivering and digitizing all factories is falling quite rapidly. And you're getting sort of like competitive, in certain instances in industries, that it's just as competitive to do a fully automated factory as a, you know, in a West country than it is as a labor in an emerging market.
Absolutely. And then you're not so dependent on the international shipping market and the impact that has on working capital and the cash investments required just to have inventory on the water. So yes, absolutely. All those factors have a play.
Yeah. And what are you seeing as sort of the coalface in terms of sort of the demand at the moment? Because obviously you seem to have grown across the patch, really, across all industries.
Yeah, I'm very encouraged by the progress we've made. We'll take us through some of the numbers in due course. Yeah. But you know, the number that I keep very close track of is the balance of our order intake and our revenue. You know, you talked at the start of this call about a 14% increase in our revenue, and you know, converting orders to revenue is critically important. It's also important we continue to build the order book and to keep pace with that. And I'm really pleased to say that order intake in the first half was broadly in line with revenue, actually within $1 million of revenue. So we're going into the second half with a strong order book and good order coverage for the second half of the year, which is critically important.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, well, that's a good segue to the financials then, Will. I suppose you could quickly take us through the sort of the highlights, particularly sort of like your improvements in margins, the sort of the, you know, the cash flow, the sales, the order book, how you're seeing that sort of panning out.
Thanks, Bob. Yes, as you said at the beginning, Paul, a really strong commercial and financial performance for MPAC in the first half of the year. I'll start with order intake. For us, very pleased. It's a strong first half, 59.7 million of order intake. That's above the trend for the first half of the year in recent years. Last year was slightly higher, but that was off the back of some pent-up demand post-supply chain crisis. So we're really pleased with order intake in the first half of the year. In terms of revenue, you've already said there, and Adam's mentioned it, we've done a great job at converting the opening order book into revenue. It's off the back of a ramp-up of technical resource and direct labour over the last 12 months. So revenue for the first half, 60 million, 14% up on the prior year. Yeah, so really strong there. And then regionally, I know that's always interesting. We still see the Americas as our strongest market. Revenue for the Americas was up 14%, slightly lower rate of increase in Europe, but it's down to the project mix and customer mix. The revenue growth, that 14%, we look at our business between original equipment and service, and we're seeing significant growth in original equipment revenue in the first half. So that's off the back of the open order book and the strength of that order book. Service growth is not so high, but the context is we had a significant growth in service revenue first half of last year. So being able to sustain that level of revenue in the first half this year from the service business, that recurring service business, is a really positive KPI for us. In terms of margins, you touched on that growth in both gross margin and operating margins. So starting with gross margins, we see an increase up to 28%. That's compared to just under 24% in the prior year. And this is a factor of better project mix within the order book and better project execution. I mentioned that OE revenue growth has been a driver to the 60 million in revenue, and it's control and execution of those projects in line with the sold margins, which has helped us deliver that gross margin improvement in the first half. And that's dropped through to underlying PBT of 4 million. That compares to 1.9 million in the prior year. So a really strong result, and that's driven that EPS growth more than doubling, as you mentioned earlier. So really pleased with all the financial metrics, growth in revenue, growth in gross margins, and in operating return and underlying EPS.
I saw your return on capital employed also got to 18%.
Yeah, indeed. And I think there's plenty of headroom for further improvement there as well. So it's a good return on capital employed. For the full year, we expect to be above 20%. So yes, we're a capital light business by nature. We've got an increase in working capital, which is a temporary dynamic at the half year. But in principle, the group is relatively capital light by nature, and that's helped drive that strong ROCE performance.
Brilliant. Okay, great. And just in that sort of top line, Adam, I know one of your strategic objectives is to sort of broaden the customer base. Are there any sort of notable wins you can sort of you talk about at all, or alternatively, you know, sort of like new products or something like that that are sort of your pillars of growth going forward?
Yeah. Well, let's cover both. Let's talk about customers first. So, In the first half of this year, 30% of our original equipment orders came from new customers to MPAC, and that's a number we're proud of and working on improving further in the future. 58 original equipment orders from 28 different customers. You know, it's a really diverse and broad customer base. But what we're really working on doing to build the group for the long term is to ensure that we continue to add really key strategic customers who we can work with, just like our existing blue chip customers, year after year after year, and support them as their businesses grow. And in the first half of this year, we were really pleased to have secured 4 new strategic customers. You know, that builds on the program from last year, and I won't go back over last year's numbers, but you can feel the momentum building. Nearly £11 million of our order intake in the first half of this year came from those 4 new strategic customers. 2 of them were completely new customers to the group. We've been working to break into their businesses for years to find ways to do things that other people can't do that they're looking for. One was a second order from a customer who we won the first order late last year. So we're really pleased to secure them, you know, further business with them. And consolidating on those first orders is so important. You know, one project isn't a customer. Mm. You've got to win 2 or 3 in a row and really prove that we're adding value. And the last of the 4 is a really important cross-sell. For the first time, selling something from our Lambert product line into a typically a Langen customer. So that's from our automation business into a typically a packaging machinery business customer. And those cross-sells are crucially important. You know, that's why we bought the Lambert business in 2019. It's why we bought the Switchback business in 2020. It's that ability to really build on the synergy and to share customers between the different businesses that we see as a really significant strategic objective for the long term. So we're making good progress. Happy to talk about innovation as well, Paul. And, you know, it was a really busy first half for us. We launched 2 new products in the first half of this year, the Horizon Top Load Cartner and the Ostro, a new mid-range side load cartner. And I say mid-range with a smile because it runs at 180 cartons per minute. You know, that's 3 right, cartons a second for us is sort of mid-range. I'm delighted with the progress the team have made there, not only launching those products, but securing the first orders from customers. In the case of the Ostro, those customers were in the bakery sector, and 2 of the customers that we secured were customers we've been looking to break into for years and hadn't found a way to do it until we launched this new product, and all of a sudden we've got something that customers are looking for. So I'm really pleased with that. Mm. The other topic that I'd like to just touch on briefly is Cube, the MPAC Cube Connect, which is our digital service offering. We've been a little bit quiet on it over the last 12, 18 months. And that's because in the background, we've been working on relaunching the product. We've actually started work with a new service provider and changed the partners that we're working with on that program. And in the first half of this year, we've relaunched with some target customers. It's a soft relaunch in that we're working just with a selected group to really work on how we tailor and bespoke that service offering for customers, because we know that it absolutely depends on understanding how the product is used in a customer's operation and tailoring it to a unique requirement. So we're working on that in the first half. I'm looking forward to further announcements in due course.
For that Cube product, the digital project, exactly what does it do for customers in terms of improving their KPIs? Is it sort of like improving sort of, you know, or reducing downtime, or is it preventative maintenance, or what is the sort of the purpose of it?
Yeah, all of the above. Taking the data that exists on the machine and making it available to customers remotely, wherever a customer wants to dial into their machine and understand performance, but also then to be able to compare fleet performance across the whole fleet of products. And that allows them to interrogate that product and really understand how it's performing and what could be done to optimizing it in some really interesting ways. It is bespoke to a particular customer, because you have to understand what a customer is trying to achieve in their operation. And fundamentally, my experience of data-driven services in many different industries in the past tells me, you know, that customers are not just looking for more data. You know, there is so much data out there, and providing data is not the answer. It's providing actionable intelligence so that operators on the ground can really understand how to improve the performance of their equipment in a way that matters to that customer. You know, that is not an easy thing to do, and it requires a really close working relationship with customers. And we're now in a position to be able to do that.
Yeah, presumably it means sort of enhancing or obtaining data, doesn't it? Historical data from the customers, so that you have a blueprint that when you can interpret the real-time data against where they want to be and where they don't want to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, good. And just in terms of also extending that product line, with that acquisition you did, the Saiga acquisition just recently, visual capabilities, not on the production line. I guess that must fit also into that digital proposition.
Yeah, it does. We're delighted with the acquisition of Saiga Vision. Saiga is a business that we've worked with for many, many years, and they've got an incredible capability to manage vision systems to create really useful data from visual images in real time, to be able to track quality of a product and take actions on a flow line in real time to improve quality. In many applications, you couldn't run the line without a Saiga Vision product. And we're delighted with the acquisition. It gives us the opportunity to now build on the capability that Saiga have developed to date in ways that our customers are really, really pushing for. For me, it's all about customers. And we're doing something in the Saiga acquisition that customers have been asking us for years.
Great. Okay, good. We're switching gears to the just at the top level, Will, with the pension and the dividend. Can you just say a couple of words on both of those? I'm guessing they're just sort of as per last time.
Yeah, Paul, there hasn't been a huge amount of movement. So the last triennial valuation for the pension scheme was June 21, and that was a deficit of 28 million. So the June 24 valuation is work in progress. We expect to conclude on that before the end of the calendar year. So it will be a short valuation cycle, and funding levels have improved significantly. So we are pretty confident we'll conclude this valuation in a much better funding level than the previous valuation. But until that's concluded with the trustees, obviously that's work in progress in the background. So not much more we can comment on there, but we've said many times before, our goal remains to decouple the scheme from the company at the first opportunity. So improved funding levels obviously help in us being able to deliver on that. And with regard to the dividend policy, the board review the policy each year in the context of capital allocations and opportunities for investment internally, and we'll continue to review on an annual basis. But at the moment, there's no change to the policy.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Brilliant. Okay. Then Adam, just moving to the sort of the clean energy sector. I suppose you could say a few words with. So I know you've had sort of like you've got a number of different opportunities. One with Freya, one with Ilika, and probably a few in the pipeline as well. Can you just talk more broadly about that sort of EV battery market?
Yeah. Our objective of the group is to double the revenue of the group in the next 5 years. And we see three key levers to do that: organic growth in our existing healthcare and food and beverage markets, acquisitions, and I'm sure we'll come on to talk about where we're going with acquisitions as well, and clean energy. Those are our three levers. Clean energy, you know, batteries is a I've always said you can't predict the clean energy market, and every day I pick up the newspapers and read about another EV business that's struggling or the rollback in, you know, Volvo's plans for their business, whatever it might be. You can't pick the winners. What we can be sure of is that there is a trend towards clean energy and a requirement for automation of those new facilities that is absolutely inevitable. And in the first half of this year, You know, we celebrated the success in our first automated production trial of a cell for Freya. You know, it was a really significant milestone for the team, and we were delighted to have achieved that in the first half of this year. We also won our first automated line for the solid state battery developer, Ilika, you know, another really exciting player in that market. And that line is right now in build in our UK factory. So very exciting there. There is more to announce in the second half of this year, and I'm itching to tell you, but until we're ready to announce, we won't do that. So, you know, for us, it's a long-term play. It's going to be a sustained effort over many years, and we absolutely believe in the trend.
Yeah. Good. Okay. And then just in terms of that sort of longer term, with you say you're doubling your turnover, was it sort of 10% target is organic growth plus on the sales line, and then 10% at sort of the EBIT level?
Yes, that's right. That's where we're heading. I want us to get to a 10% operating return and better. And part of that comes from this balance of original equipment and services. Will talked about the work we've done over, you know, over the last few years to get the service business to where it is. We're aiming for a tramline of sort of 30% of our business coming from services, plus or minus five. And I think we're in good shape there. So I see a path to achieving that doubling the revenue in the next 5 years.
Yeah. And then just to say briefly on the sort of the M&A strategy, is it sort of infill, try and find some new products, applications, maybe regionals, et cetera, something like that?
Yeah, we've got a really clear strategy on acquisition. For us, it's all about being able to offer a full line offering to customers in the future. You know, we have a really good secondary packaging business today that does the sort of cartoning, case packing, and to some extent a handful of palletizing systems as well. And we in the Lambert business, we have this incredible capability in sort of front end automation of the manufacture and assembly of products. But there are gaps in what we offer to customers today. And that means there are certain customers who we cannot sell to, who want to take a full line offering from a supplier. And we're not in that business yet. And when we look ahead to the group we want to be, filling in those gaps is critically important. It's not just, you know, a one acquisition strategy. There'll be several to work on over the next few years. We're also clear on what it's not. Mm-hmm. You know, we operate businesses in North America and Europe today. We sell all over the world, we support customers all over the world, but we operate businesses that manufacture in those countries, and we know how to do that. And we're not looking to sort of accidentally acquire our way into a Chinese manufacturing facility or a Brazilian manufacturing facility or something we wouldn't know how to run. That's not the objective. And we have an enormous opportunity in the existing markets that we already sell into. Mm-hmm. You know, we understand customers in food and bev, in healthcare, and in clean energy. We don't need to go outside of those markets to grow our group substantially for the future. So we're not about to sort of stray into a customer risk with customers we don't understand through an acquisition. That's not what we're aiming to do. And that means that, you know, when you put those three factors together, there are some very clear targets that we're interested in. You know, companies who we think are doing incredible things, like Sagavision, mm-hmm. Who, if they came to market, we'd love to be ready to acquire them on that day. But, you know, acquisitions are not something you can announce until they're ready to announce. So at the time we're ready to, Paul, we'll be back in contact.
Yeah, well, you're doing pretty well. If your sales are up 14% without a sort of full line, then well, crikey, yeah. You sort of certainly whet my appetite when you come to have a full solutions offering. And also, I guess, actually, I mean, I know it's a sort of like an aside, and we all don't know what the outcome is, but if President Donald Trump does get into the presidency and goes through with his import tariffs of 80% plus for EVs from China, and the EU starts putting protectionist measures, then basically it's going to jumpstart most of the sort of other production, particularly sort of batteries, but lots of other products as well in sort of like the EU and particularly in the States, isn't it? So we'll wait and see. That's a variable. Now, in terms of just closing off the H2, what sort of revenue visibility do you have over the sort of full year? Which I think the brokers are saying 120 million. I know you've done 60 in the first half. I think your closing order book, was it 71, I think? Was it in June? So what sort of visibility do you have for the rest of the year?
Will, do you want to take this one?
Yeah, sure. So you're right, Paul. Order book more than 70 million. So that gives us a really high level of coverage over the second half of the year. That order book obviously extends beyond the end of the calendar year and well into 2025. So if you combine the second half of this year and the guidance for the first half of next year, We have coverage of about 60% of revenue over that period, which is exactly the sweet spot for where MPAC should be. So we're sat here today pretty happy with the coverage for the second half of this year and with the right level of order book coverage going into next year as well.
Yeah, and I guess you've also got that sort of repeat revenues from your service, haven't you, which is just over £2.5 million a month, I think, which is going to obviously drop into the second half.
Exactly, yeah. So that comes through with a relatively short conversion cycle from order to revenue. So that helps keep revenue generating on a rapid pace.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks again, gents. You've obviously got a lot of balls spinning, or lots of balls in the air and plates spinning there. So very much looking forward in hearing how things progress in the ensuing months. So thanks again, guys.
Thank you.
Well, let me wrap up and give you a kind of closing statement then. So there's three things I'd like to leave you with. Number one, strong revenue growth, improving ROCE and EPS. I think we're really pleased with the progress we've made. More importantly, for the long term, it's progress in our strategic initiatives. You know, the work we've done on innovations, on improving lead time, on gross margin percentage, and fundamentally on supporting those strategic account customers. And then the last piece, so important for your listeners. You know, we're on track to deliver our full year numbers in line with market guidance.
Brilliant. Okay, well, looking forward to in hearing more as the year progresses. So thanks, guys.
Thanks, Paul.
Good stuff. Thanks, Paul.
The Vox Markets Podcast. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.